In the broad daylight, we ran aground going through that same street. We went in, had a real job getting off. Okay, so much for that. Now let's get back to the student course.
Well, it's interesting because I've heard a lot about Bobby Drysback.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the
yeah, speaking of my guys, the guys you're dealing with to a large extent, the physics lab fellows.
Yes.
And Drysback, of course, was one of the mainstay characters there.
Yes. The Dow Research Pioneers book does have a picture of him with holding a collection of a box of a collection of his insects.
He was a real honest-to-gosh authority.
They went to the U of M, didn't they?
They went to the U of M. Real valuable collection. Yeah, they went to the U of M. He was a real authority and quite a lot of fun to talk to. He was really very interesting to talk to when it came to the idiosyncrasies of wasps.
When you met him there, did you say anything about your upcoming experience?
No, I didn't say anything about it. Unfortunately, the fellows didn't either.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, back to the student training program. I'm interested in your experiences as you rotated through the six-week period.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a different rotation because you were an electrical engineer, or were all of the people put in the same?
No, they weren't all put in the same groupings and same rotational sequence. There was an attempt made on Steve's part to rotate them through things they would not otherwise see in their subsequent experience. The fact that I was going to be for sure winding up in the physics lab meant that I did not go through the physics lab in the training course, but I covered all the other things. I get my acquaintanceship with the physics lab later, and that's of course the way it worked out. Have you ever seen books on the student course?
No.
Let me see if I can't. Can I put this down for a moment?
Certainly.
Let me see if I. Here, you get some idea what they're all about. Yeah, anything but sewers and the whole works. Digging sewers.
It's certainly a quick way to learn about the company.
Yeah. Oh man, and learn about the people, and learn about labor. I'll tell you, that was a real experience for us. I had not had that kind of an experience before. And gosh, it was. It was an education that I wouldn't. At the time, I was not so sure. I was completely enthused about it. A lot of the stuff was a lot of fun. A lot of it was hard work, and some of it was kind of boring. But boy, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world now. It was an education in itself.
Would it be possible to get copies of some of these?
Yeah, if you want to.
I'd certainly like to have something like this to put in our file. We could get copies.
What do you mean, the whole thing, for example? Is that right? Well, I would pick one. I'd like to find the one on the instrument. Look at here, cross section of manual. Well, that's an original drawing.
Mm, it's beautiful.
You can see I had a little mechanical or a little draftsman experience.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to get.
It has to be done now, but somewhere if we could get copies made.
Well, keep in mind, what I'd like to do is find the instrument department report, because there were so many diagrams and drawings and photographs that we spent quite a lot of time making my own photographs for the thing. I just didn't run across it in the batch that we got there.
But those would be, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah. It was a thorough job. We were all graded all the way through it. Some of the books have the grades in them, but this one apparently doesn't. Here's the way we did certain photographs.
Hmm. How many of these would you have then? One for each?
6 weeks.
Each 6 weeks?
So there's at least that. And then there's supporting ones too, like bulletins and things like this about various pieces of equipment that would be used by that department.
Do you recall which departments you rotated through?
Well, obviously the pipe shop was one, the boiler shop was one of the most interesting ones was the boiler shop. The boiler shop in a company like the Dow Chemical Company at that time, and I don't know, maybe still does, makes an awful lot of their own reactors, big reactors, you know. And one of the most interesting experiences I had was with a guy by the name of Joe LaFleur, who was the layout man for this steel plate for making complex reactors with pipes that enter in at certain angles and leave an unusual hole. He'd lay this all out with chalk on big steel plates and then expect it to go back together, and you know, they'd cut out the weldments here and the weldment there, and then bend the whole thing into shape and put it together and expect it to accept the entrance and exit pipes and tubes and things like that. And it was perfect. It just worked out beautifully. Same time in the in the boiler shop, they had a blacksmith worked with the forge and the whole works, and he was in the process of making a set of andirons to take home, you know, out surreptitiously, and he had them all designed so that they could knock it down and get them into a lunch pail. You learn more things. For example, where to go in the company to smoke and not be detected. There's places all over the place where you could get away from the security people.
Was smoking not permitted on the
plant? Oh, yeah, not permitted, except in certain offices and labs and places where it was controlled. It was very carefully controlled. But, yeah, I'll be glad to put together an example. I'd like not to try that. You don't want them all.
Well, let me think about that. But I think that something, because this kind of thing is, I've heard so much about this student course. I've talked about Ray Boyer went through it and others. But this is the first time I've ever seen anything of that someone has kept this kind of documentation about it. So I think that becomes quite important. And we'd like them all. I'll be glad to pay for any reproduction costs. But
geez, that'd be quite a job. Anyway, why don't you think about it?
Okay.
Maybe an example would satisfy you. Most economical insulation thickness. How about that? Well,
something that I wanted to talk to you about later in terms of your, while we're looking at these things, your personal papers and records,
I haven't been very diligent about keeping. I've got a lot of odds and ends, but, like an honest-to-God researcher would want to make sure he kept all of his papers and all of his publications and all this sort of thing. I haven't patents. I haven't really been that diligent about it. I've got quite a bit of stuff, but not like what I expect a real dedicated researcher would have.
Well, from that standpoint, Herman Mark doesn't have anything.
Oh, doesn't he really?
No, the only thing he has are his reprints and the papers that he's...
Yeah.
But all of the other, there's no other material.
What are you going to do with all this stuff?
Well, the center is acting as a clearinghouse for scholarly work in the future, and so one of our aims is to collect as much information as possible and assist in its dissemination to those people who are interested in the historical stuff.
But that's the idea is to make it available for students that want to...
Students, scholars, people who are working in
scholars.
The area.
So
in terms of personal papers, we don't specifically collect those, but we want to assist someone in getting them into a repository where they would be preserved, either a local historical society, a company, archives, a university archives.
This brings us to the question of this German plastics practice slides and things like that. You know, I've got quite a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we do.
That,
from the 1945.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll be glad to show it to you. Walt Glover mentioned it to one of your chaps, and he's written me about it, and I frankly haven't answered his letter because I didn't quite know how to answer it about the fact that they would like to have that.
Is
but
that Peter Morris that wrote?
This was George.
Oh, George
Sellos. George Sellos.
Oh, what is the date on that?
Oh, this is quite a long time back.
Okay, because George. Okay. Okay. He was the. At the time, we have someone else who's now working on archives, but that is exactly the kind of thing that he has said there, that either the center would be interested in collecting it, adding it to our archives, or making sure that it is preserved.
It was so vague to me that it sounded like it might get lost in the shuffle.
Okay, well, we can talk about that later. Maybe when we reach that particular point and talk about that, we
Very
can
good.
Include those questions. The point that George makes is that either added to our collection or that it is put in a proper archival repository.
Yeah.
And we are now in the process of coming out with an archival guide for scholars so that they would know that this material is at least preserved someplace. And so the center doesn't directly collect everything, but at least make sure that it's preserved somewhere, and then we keep a record of where those where that material is for future access.
Something should be done with it. It shouldn't just be dumped out.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's a lot of effort went into it, and a lot of good historical stuff.
Oh,
are you familiar with the book?
Yes, I've seen it. I haven't read it all, but I've seen it.
Well, it'd be quite a chore to read that book.
I read the introductory part and looked, tried to examine it as best I could, and that's fascinating in itself.
Oh yeah. That's getting back to the student course.
We made back up to the student course, and I'm glad to see that you have that material preserved. You said you went through the boiler shop, the pipe shop,
the instrument department. the lead shop, engineering department.
What was the lead shop?
Well, lead burning. In a company like Dow, you've got many cases where you're dealing with something that needs to, the resistance of lead, maybe sulfuric acid or something like that. And you need a reactor that will handle extremely severe corrosive conditions, so you make it out of lead.
I see.
And these chaps were literally building reactors out of a lead sheet and so on, without, in some cases, I wondered about too much regard about lead poisoning. But the tin shop, and then a warehouse, which was an education in itself, dispensing all kinds of plumbing supplies and valves and everything else. You really get to know those products. I really enjoyed that experience.
It really gets you into the production area very well.
Yeah.
I count seven.
Well, I haven't attempted to.
Did you ever make up the 6 weeks you missed today?
No, I didn't make up the 6 weeks I missed. No, they started a new course. That was a whole new deal. We just forgave that.
were there any others in that group? Do you remember any of the others who went through that with you?
Oh, yes. Gosh. Of course, there was Bill Dixon, who was primarily a chemist, but my roommate was Buzz Nelson, University of Minnesota. He was in it. Bill Melsing, University of Michigan State. Guy D. Kuiper. I don't know. Do you want to keep these names?
No.
Bob Heitz. Those are some of the fellows that I remember.
Any other experiences in any of the other shops that you recall?
Well, yeah. Oh, one of that I didn't mention, it was the electrical shop. I think I've got most of them. Anyway, let me give you sort of a typical experience in the electrical shop. This was not my experience. It was Guy D. Kuiper's. The electrical crew this is a line crew, and there is no more foul-mouthed crew than I've ever had anything to do with than a line crew on electrical operation. These guys were pulling power lines over crossarms on poles, and it didn't make too much difference the fact that they were stripping the insulation right off, just peeling it right off as a brand new wire. And the Buster, what the heck was his last name? It was the head of the crew, and he was the roughest character. Anyway, Kuiper suggested to him that there's a better way to do that. Not to draw it right over the cross arm, but to draw it through a pulley or something like this, you see. Save the insulation. And Buster said to him, well, so you want to tell me how to run your job, eh? The next day, Kuiper was out digging post holes for power poles in a sand area of the plant where if you got just about the hole you dug, it would cave in, see? And he spent the rest of that week. Some of these 6 weeks period would be broken up into just a week with this crew and a week with that crew and a week with the next crew and so on. So you practically ran into all, except for the pure operating people, you practically ran into all the service people in the whole plant. And that was fascinating. You really get to learn the thinking of an hourly man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
I recall one experience in working in an caustic evaporator. This is in the winter time. Temperature outside was about 10 below. The temperature inside the evaporator, this is a big thing. The diameter of the evaporator would probably be 30 feet, 25 feet, something like that. And it was, we were sitting on a tube plate, or standing on tube plates, and drawing tubes and replacing the tubes in the evaporator as they get corroded out. You have caustic dripping down on you, and then as you pull each tube, steam would leak out because the valve wasn't tight, and the temperature inside that thing was about 120 degrees, and outside, the minute you stepped outside, your overalls froze solid. It was a trying experience. But we lived to tell about it.
I think Ray Boyer went through, the year before you?
He was a year ahead of me. I didn't realize he'd gone through the regular student course, but he probably had. Mm-hmm. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be pretty much the same thing, I would think. They carried that on for a few years and then for some reason or other let it drop. I think one of the reasons they let it drop was they were hiring too many people. It was sort of impractical to send that many. Mm-hmm. Just the plain mathematics of organizing and sending them around different places, keeping track of them at all. It was a big job.
Did you ever meet Dow during this period?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He was an easy man to meet. I met him more frequently afterwards when I was working in the physics lab.
Mm-hmm.
But, he was quite an easy person to meet. And he was an enthusiast about the course.
Did he check up on, did he come out in the field? And
he would be out in the field quite a bit, yeah. Not necessarily checking up on the students, but he'd be out there for other reasons and you'd run into him as a student one way or another.
Well, when you completed the student training program, it had already been decided in advance through STARC you were going to the physics lab. That was agreed when you were arrived.
I was hired to do research work on the testing of electrical materials. Insulators, plastic materials that were coming along so rapidly at the time.
And you spent 2 years then, is that correct? Yes, 2 years.
Yeah.
From 37 to 39. What was your first assignment? And who did you work for?
Well, I worked for Dr. Lauren Matheson, Matheson, who would report to Ray Bounty, and Ray Bounty reported to Dr. Greeley. My first assignment was to set up the proper testing procedures for these electrical insulators, new polymers that the company was, the research lab was making. Getting the equipment, building the necessary cells for the testing, and doing the testing work, although we had hourly fellows to do the actual running of the specific tests. But anyway, that was the job. Really, I became a little bit disillusioned with it. There wasn't the challenge that I'd hoped there would be, but my interests were broad enough, so I soon became interested in a lot of other things going on around me and just grinding away at testing of fluids or insulating fluids or liquids or solids, polymers and things like that.
During this period, you had a number of patents with Alvin Hansen.
Well, what happened was that all the new polymers that were being made by different people throughout the lab, Larry Amos or Sylvia Stacer, or incidentally, there's another person that has her name cropped up along the line.
And in fact, I tried to see her on this trip, but she's not been feeling well.
No, she's had some problems.
Yes.
All these materials would come through the testing lab, so I got to know different people that were supplying them and so on. And among them, Aldi Hansen. Now, Aldi Hansen also graduated from Alma College, so I knew him back over there. And I haven't mentioned it along here, but I've always been very interested in photography. And Aldi was very interested in photography, so we got quite well acquainted through that. And then he began to do some work in copolymerization. And I was quite attracted to what he was doing, and since we'd worked together before, why, it was sort of natural. And incidentally, Matheson went out of town and was gone for quite a long period of time. So it gave me a little free time to do some other things. And by the time he got back, I was pretty well immersed in copolymerization work with Aldi Hansen. And he didn't object to that. He was very, very easygoing, very freewheeling, because we were working on the cutting edge of new things. And I enjoyed that part of it. I understood enough of the chemistry to get along very well, in spite of the fact that I hadn't had a PhD in chemistry like some of the fellows had had. So that's how we got started in copolymerization and we're dealing with plastic materials.
So you didn't really do that much electrical testing?
No, we didn't really do that much electrical testing. No, I was glad for what breadth of experience I'd had in physics and chemistry and math to help out in fields other than just plain electrical testing. Mm-hmm.
There was one patent that intrigued me. It was an apparatus for stretching cordage.
Well, one of the other things that we were dealing with was Saran. Saran is a crystalline polymer. And if you extrude it in a certain fashion, quench it to make it super cooled, you could then stretch it and it would crystallize and form strong monofilaments just like nylon does. And we were considering it for things like fishing lines and that sort of thing. One of the problems that we had was stretching it at a constant torque, but a very widely varying speed. And there was no equipment in the field that you could turn the speed way up and still maintain this roughly the same pull. So I designed an electrical motor apparatus that would do that and patented it, and that's where that came from. Really not much came from the patent. It wasn't anything that Dow was particularly interested in, because we weren't going to make fishing lines other than experimentally. And so it sort of died on the vine as far as being a useful patent. It's quite possible that somebody might have gotten interested in an electric motor manufacturer or something like that to make an unusual motor, which would pull at the same torque for a widely varying range of speed.